The call was short. The voice was unfamiliar. The message was blunt. Marlon was dead. But the caller used a name Marlon did not use. And that changed everything. Welcome to Crime Path Podcast. Every case leaves a trail. In each episode, we follow that trail through the available record, the evidence, the testimony, the timelines, and the gaps that remain. We stay with what can be sourced. Where something is alleged, disputed, or unclear, we will say so. Let's begin. A family friend in Aladala answered the phone, and a voice he did not recognize told him that Marlon was dead. But the caller did not use the name Marlon MacDonald. The caller used Marlon's nickname and a family surname he did not publicly use. That detail mattered. Only people close enough to his family were likely to know it. By then, Marlon Sean MacDonald had vanished from the official record. He was last confirmed alive on September 5th, 2012. That day, he attended the Commonwealth Bank at Forster and lodged a dispute about money withdrawn from his account. Later, at 6:05 that evening, he attended Forster Police Station and reported in line with a bail condition. After that, there was no confirmed sighting. No bank activity, no Centrelink activity, no custody record, no administrative sign of life, and no contact with the family he usually stayed connected to. Marlon's family did not report him missing immediately. The findings explain that his life at the time involved criminal charges, bail conditions, drug use, and violent conflict. At first, some people thought he may have left the area, gone to Sydney, or stayed away to avoid police. Concern grew when he did not attend his uncle's funeral on the 12th of October 2012. His daughter made a formal missing person report in January 2013. The next day, Marlon's mother and sister also went to Forster Police Station. By then, no one in the family had heard from him in a long time. On the 25th of February 2013, after police received information from a registered source, the matter was transferred to Lake Macquarie Local Area Command. Strike Force Josquin was created, and the State Crime Command Homicide Squad was notified. The investigation that followed was difficult from the beginning. Some witnesses had drug and alcohol issues. Some had cognitive or mental health difficulties. Some were hostile or uncooperative. Some accounts may have been incomplete or untruthful. And around Marlon's disappearance, rumours multiplied. The coroner recorded stories about drug debts, prison enemies, bikies, stolen money, overdose, unlawful killing, and possible sightings. None of those rumours provided a reliable answer. What the court could find was narrower, but still grave. On November 2, 2018, Deputy State Coroner Harriet Graham found that Marlon MacDonald was dead. He died on or shortly after September 5, 2012. He died in New South Wales, Australia. His cause of death remained unknown. And while his death was suspicious, the coroner was unable to make any further finding about the manner of death. This is Episode 3. The phone call. Marlon was born in 1970. He grew up in the Forster area on the New South Wales mid-north coast. His mother described him as a great footballer, kind to his siblings, and generally happy before his drug use escalated. The coroner also recorded the harder parts of his life: drug use from an early age, time in juvenile custody, convictions, and serious violence. His relationship with his partner, Joanne, was marked by severe domestic violence and significant drug use. Joanne told the court she sometimes left Forster for the Windale area to stay with family and get a break. The coroner found her evidence about ongoing violence was amply corroborated by other accounts. The findings put Joanne at the center of several parts of the timeline. They also record her as a survivor of serious domestic violence. Both things have to be held at once. On August 28, 2012, Joanne went to Forster Police Station to complain about Marlon's behavior. Police made an interim apprehended violence order to protect her and began looking for Marlon so it could be served. The same day, another former partner contacted Forster Police and said Marlon was near her home in breach of an existing apprehended violence order. Marlon was arrested that evening, charged, and later released on conditional bail after his mother posted $300. It is thought he travelled directly to Windale to look for Joanne. On the 1st of September 2012, Marlon was in Windale, waiting near a known drug house. The coroner recorded that Marlon appeared to hope Joanne would turn up. When Joanne arrived in a friend's car, Marlon confronted her aggressively and she drove away. Joanne later said she became more concerned for her safety and decided to take her children to Sydney. Police confirmed some of her movements through road camera evidence and later police contact. On September 2nd, Marlon was taken to Newcastle train station by a friend. On the 3rd of September, he reported his bank card stolen at the Newcastle branch of the Commonwealth Bank, then returned to Forster. On the 4th of September, he withdrew the last $28 from his account at the Commonwealth Bank in Forster. On the 5th of September, he disputed withdrawals that Joanne had made from his account days earlier. Then, at 6:05 that evening, he reported at Forster Police Station under his bail condition. That is the last confirmed sighting. The coroner later observed that there was little direct evidence of Marlon's state of mind at that time. But it was likely he was angry with Joanne for reporting him to police, angry she had taken money from his account, and angry he could not immediately find her. There was no documented history of self-harm or suicide attempts, and he had recently denied thoughts of self-harm during a custody assessment. The coroner found it very unlikely that his disappearance resulted from suicide. An overdose was possible. But without later human intervention, the coroner found it highly likely his body would have been found if he had died from an accidental overdose. What remained was the most troubling possibility. After examining the evidence, the coroner found it appeared most likely Marlon had met with foul play. When the first official missing person report was made, police did not immediately treat the matter as a homicide investigation. Marlon had outstanding warrants, and police at first believed he might be avoiding them. But after new information came in on February 25, 2013, Strike Force Josquin began. Investigators took statements, checked records, used covert strategies, and put out media releases in 2014 and 2015. Time had already damaged the investigation. Physical evidence, including relevant CCTV, was difficult or impossible to obtain. Potential witnesses were transient, uncooperative, affected by substance use, or unreliable. One of the earliest and strangest pieces of information was the phone call to the family friend in Ulla Dulla. When Marlon's daughter reported him missing, she told police an unknown person had telephoned that family friend and said Marlon was dead. Many in the family had heard about the call, and the family friend confirmed to police that it had happened. The caller used Marlon's nickname and a family surname he did not publicly use. The family friend told the court it was a short call. He did not recognize the voice. Police later believed the call was likely made by his partner's former partner. Investigators connected him to a stolen phone used to make the call. But the evidence did not become simple. In court, the former partner was unreliable. After hesitation, he appeared to accept that he had called and said words to the effect that Marlon was dead. Later, he said he made the call because the family deserved to know. Then he moved back again, saying he probably did not make the call.
The coroner accepted that the call had been made,
but she could not determine whether he was repeating a rumour or whether he knew something more concrete about Marlon's disappearance.
That is the uncomfortable shape of the case. The call suggested someone knew, or believed, early on that Marlon was dead. It mattered because of the specific name used, and because it reached Marlon's family before police could say what had happened.
But the call did not identify where Marlon was. It did not identify how he died. It did not establish who caused his death.
And it did not answer whether the caller had first-hand knowledge or had simply picked up a rumour already moving through the community.
There were more claims like that.
In January 2016, while Joanne was in custody, she approached a prison officer and said she wanted to speak to police about Marlon. She later told police she'd been in Windale and had spoken to someone who told her where Marlon's body was buried. She asked whether the information would help her get out of jail.
Later, she said the information had come from an old school friend connected to the drug house in Windale.
Police questioned him. He denied knowing where Marlon's body was. At the inquest, Joanne said he had told her he had heard where Marlon's body was, but had not told her the location.
The coroner found it likely that he had told Joanne, at some point, that he knew where Marlon's remains were.
But again, the finding stopped short.
It was unclear whether he actually knew something, or whether he was repeating one of the many rumours about Marlon's disappearance. The findings also examined rumours involving people close to his partner.
There was evidence of bad feeling between Marlon and Joanne's brothers because of his violence toward their sister. One brother had previously been stabbed in the neck by Marlon after he became aware Marlon was assaulting her. He was hospitalized and received 13 staples. Both brothers gave evidence. Both denied harming Marlon. Police conducted close surveillance during the investigation period and found no direct evidence linking either brother to the disappearance.
Other leads moved in different directions.
Police also examined rumours about drug debts and prison enemies.
Some witnesses denied remembering earlier conversations or denied knowing what happened. Police checked for concrete evidence, but found nothing linking that line of inquiry to Marlon's disappearance.
Another line of inquiry involved a man with a family connection who had supplied ice to Joanne and Marlon a few times. Police received information that Marlon may have been killed, or his body disposed of, in the backyard of a house in the Gateshead area. There were reports of a fire. A man connected to that location denied involvement and denied knowing anything about Marlon's disappearance. Police investigated, but it did not provide a reliable answer.
There were broader rumours too.
Claims about a tavern robbery, claims he had been thrown to sea, claims he had been buried at Newcastle Beach, claims he had been killed by bikies or standover men, gone to King's Cross with Joanne, been in custody in Melbourne, or overdosed. The coroner recorded those claims as unsubstantiated. None proved fruitful. None gave a concrete explanation.
This is one of the ethical problems in telling Marlon's story. The rumours are part of the official findings because they show how broad and difficult the investigation became. But they are not findings. They are not proof. They are not a substitute for evidence. The court's final position was more careful. Marlon's death was suspicious, and it was most likely he had been a victim of crime. But the court could not say who was responsible, how he died, or where exactly it happened. By 2018, more than 6 years had passed since Marlon was last seen. Police had checked the usual administrative records. There had been no relevant bank or Centrelink transactions since September 2012. No police or custody record showing Marlon alive. No electoral roll, road authority, housing authority, utility, or births, deaths, and marriages record that explained his absence.
Checks of unidentified bodies in New South Wales and other states had not identified him.
There was no evidence he had a passport or had travelled overseas.
Detective Inspector Hemsworth told the court the updated checks showed no signs of life.
The coroner considered whether Marlon might have voluntarily disappeared. She found that starting a new life under a false name would have been extremely difficult. Marlon had no money, limited education, and limited resources outside his small community. Most importantly, he had made no contact with his family.
The coroner was satisfied that if Marlon were alive, someone would have heard from him.
So the formal finding was made. Marlon McDonald is dead. He died on or shortly after September the 5th, 2012. He died in New South Wales.
His cause of death remains unknown. His death is suspicious. The coroner could make no further finding about the manner of his death.
The coroner went further in her reasoning, while still staying inside the limits of the evidence.
Suicide was very unlikely. Accidental overdose was possible, but unlikely to explain why no body was found unless someone later intervened.
Natural medical emergency was also unlikely to explain the absence of remains. After examining all the evidence, the coroner found it appeared most likely Marlon had met with foul play.
She also said it was most likely he had been a victim of crime.
But that is not the same as identifying an offender.
No person was convicted. No person was named by the coroner as legally responsible for causing Marlon's death. The investigation did not recover his remains.
His family was left with a finding of death, but not with the answer they needed most.
At the end of the inquest, the coroner made two recommendations. First, that Marlon's death be referred to the Unsolved Homicide Unit of the NSW Police Homicide Squad for review and potential reinvestigation. Second, that NSW Police apply for and support a reward for information leading to the recovery and return of Marlon's remains to his family.
The coroner said she believed someone in the community was likely to know what happened and may be able to assist.
That sentence is one of the hardest in the findings. Not because it solves the case,
because it says the answer may still exist somewhere close enough to be spoken. Marlon Sean McDonald was last confirmed alive in Forster on the 5th of September 2012.
His remains have not been recovered. His cause of death is unknown. No one has been convicted of causing his death, and the official finding remains both clear and incomplete.
Marlon is dead. His death is suspicious. Someone may still know why.
That's the story as we know it. In cases like this, the record can contain confirmed facts, disputed claims, and unanswered questions. Where the sources are unclear, we have tried to say so clearly. You'll find the sources for this episode in the show notes. If you found this episode worth listening to, follow the show, leave a rating, or share it with someone who's interested in true crime told with care and respect. I'm Elias Vale, and this has been Crime Path Podcast. Until next time, thank you for listening.